Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, where we export Swedish unicorness.
No buzzwords, just real-life stories with Sweden's most innovative thinkers and doers. A podcast made by me, Sandra Bourbon.
And me, Sara Hermansson. It's time for our third episode in the mini-series that we do as a collaboration with Swedish Mining Innovation. And today's topic is really extra important. It's regarding circular economy in the mining industry. Because we all know for true that the minerals and metals out there that we break won't last forever. So we need other solutions. And recycling is discussed as the big thing to come. But how is it actually done today? And what's the drawbacks with recycling? And how much can be recycled in the future? Or will we always depend on breaking new ground? So to get this insight, we have two guests in this episode. Charlotte Andersson, she's a professor in process metallurgy, and Lynn Andersson, who's a general manager at Boliden Rönnskär. They both have experience with recycling of metals and minerals, and how it compares to breaking new materials from the ground. So let's get started and learn some more. Hi Charlotte, and welcome to Swedish Innovation Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much. I'm doing fine. And well, I feel, as always, a bit innovative.
Yeah, sounds good. And as I mentioned in the intro, you're a professor in process metallurgy, and you need to give an explanation of what really that is.
So one easy way to explain that is to look at the processes that you use when you are making metals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I guess then looking at our topic today, circular economy, when you look at process to doing metals, it could be either a process to break new material from a mine, going all the way to the product, or it could also be the process of recycling, or is that different type of process metallurgy?
No, in one way, you don't have to see it as different things. So you could just see it as that the material is coming from different sources. One is then the mines, or what you tend to call the primary, what you can find in the ground. And the other one is then things we have used in society. And then, of course, you could have other things like waste, for example, where you can also find metals. So to produce metals can be done then in several different ways, and there is not really any opposition in that, if you want to look at it like that. So it's just different sources where you can find metals.
Mm-hmm. And end product is still the same, you would say, in quality, or would that
no it could be different. It depends a little bit on, without going in too much in detail in that, it depends a little bit, of course, what we are discussing, what kind of metal we are looking at, and it could also sometimes be alloys, for example. So it could be steel, for example, which is actually an alloy.
That's right.
So that's a different thing.
Yeah, is that a problem then when you have alloys to recycle them? Is it easier to recycle pure materials like aluminium or copper?
You could say that there are, of course, challenges with everything. I wouldn't say that there are many different challenges when it comes to recycling today. I would say one of the biggest challenges we have is, of course, the amount of material available if you want to discuss recycling. So it's if we want to have a lot of recycled materials, I mean, first we have to have them in circulation and use them as long as we can before we start recycling them. And certain metals that we use today, for example, we could take lithium, for example, we don't have that much that we can recycle. So we have to think of, we still want to use the products, we don't want to discard them just to be able to recycle them. So I think that's why both mines and recycling, they're complementary. At least today, It's a different thing in the future when maybe we have a lot of metals already existing in society.
Mm-hmm. Because that is one of the questions that I think many people have out there. Is there like a possibility to reach the vision of going like fully circular in terms of minerals and metals, and that we don't need to break new material? Do you think we can achieve like close to 100% in terms of some of the metals that we really need today?
No, I don't think so. Not today, but maybe in the future when we have a lot of more metals, but not today. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't recycle everything that we can. And that, I think, is the first step towards forward.
Yeah, very wise. I think sometimes in the debate in sustainability, it tend to become a bit either or discussion. Like either you do it fully and it solves all the problems, or there is no purpose of it. And I guess in this case, and in many cases, it's shown to be the opposite. You need several solutions and you kind of need to do them all. So, yes.
Exactly. I think we should look at it like that. We need primary resources. So we need mines. That's very important. Both connected to what you say before, when it comes to specific qualities of certain metals that we need, but also that we don't have enough metals in circulation. This is, of course, connected to what we see, that everyone is getting it better in the world and we are using more metals in the world. And sometimes you can tend to think that it's only like luxury products, but it's very basic products we are talking about sometimes. And products that I think are important for many people in their life that they couldn't imagine giving up.
Mm. What would be an example of
products? You could take an example that I think most people, at least in the Western world, wouldn't give up. Healthcare, for example, or medical technical products where you need metals. So metals is sort of the foundation of our society. So we use it almost in everything.
Mm. But it sounds strange to think that, I mean, there aren't enough metals out there to recycle, because it feels like we have been mining for such a long time. It must be an enormous amount of metals out there. Is it difficult to get them back? Do we not have enough incentives to return them? Or are they just, you know, having a very long lifetime of the product, so we don't need to return them yet because the product is still functioning? Or what do you think is the obstacle of getting more materials to recycle?
I think it depends a bit on what metals we are discussing, because yes, we have been using metals for a long time, but many of the metals we use today, we haven't been using for a very long time. I mean, many of the, what is usually termed like critical metals maybe today, we have only been using for a relatively short time. And not very much of them either. So you could take the lithium-ion battery. We haven't been using that we have in cars, for example, for such a long time. So most of those cars are still running in the roads, for example.
Yeah, that's very true. And we did have a specific episode on recycling in the battery industry previous in our podcast with Kling System. And I think one thing there was, as you say, that, I mean, we haven't had electric vehicles for such a long time, and they're actually better than we thought. So the lifetime of the battery is longer, which, I mean, in one way it's good, because I think maybe that's something also to think about. We tend to think circular economy equals recycling, but we also had other episodes with circular economy previously, and I learned that it's better to always think reuse before recycle.
Exactly.
So maybe we also need to, you know, implement that term. But how can you think of that in terms of metals and minerals? For me, that's like, you know, I don't know, things you don't elaborate with yourself at home, at least.
No, I mean, I think we should always think like that in general. I think it's important if we aim to reach some kind of circular economy. But coming back to that, I still think we need then mines to get the metals to be able to have products that can live for a long time. And once they are finished, we should then, of course, recycle the metals that are in them.
I see. But it sounds like, I mean, for example, I understand that, okay, like computers and cell phones, you really should recycle. There are a lot of, I mean, metals in there that we could use again. But maybe sometimes when you get a new phone, your old one is still alive, so to say.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe someone can reuse it before you actually recycle the phone. Or could you put it that way?
Yeah, if I understand what you mean. Of course, that could also be an option to reuse it in some other context, of course, before you start recycling it. But one aspect of this today, I mean, today we are inventing more and more, let's say, advanced and very helpful products that we need. But one aspect that's been discussed for a long time, but we don't see so much of it, yes, it's to design something to be able to recycle it in a good way. Because today, for example, the metal content can be very, very small in a product and of a specific metal. And that could make it even more difficult, actually, to recycle that metal. If you have just a couple of tiny amount, promille of one element of a metal in a product, that's very difficult to recycle. So I think we also have to try to think more of, once this product is discarded, how should we be able to extract all the metals in this?
Yeah. And regarding that, I mean, what would you say is the obstacles here? Because I can also see that the ones designing, producing products, I mean, there's not really a, how to say, a business incentive to make the product more expensive just so you can recycle it.
No.
Yeah. And it's a tricky thing maybe to get that into the system then.
Yeah. I agree. And I think this is, of course, one also have to look at this from a system perspective. So what could be beneficial for different systems? And of course, there could also be new, businesses and new cases coming up connected to this in the future. At least I hope so. I see the possibility when people are getting more and more interested in this and think that this is important. And of course, to obtain sustainable use of the resources we have.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking, I mean, at least in Sweden, we have a very established system on how to return the soda cans. And we had forever, at least in my opinion, where you get paid per can that you put in a machine. And I think that's the only way a consumer can get paid for recycling. And maybe that should be more, developed. Maybe I know some companies maybe, give me a few kroners if I return my cell phone or stuff like that. But it's not really well known yet.
No.
And I don't see why that is not happening more, because the metals are so, expensive and special resource that I guess people are willing to pay for metal scrap. Or what's the actual case there?
So this is not really my field, to put it like that. But of course, I guess we have a big variety of products out on the market. That makes it more difficult with containing many, many different types of elements. So the easy elements, for example, when it comes to steel, we have a very good recycling, for example.
Well, I guess steel is one of the metals you can recycle, and also aluminium and aluminium cans. And are there any other typical metals that is very good at recycling and that have gotten very far in Sweden?
I think we can, from a theoretical perspective, you could say we could recycle a lot of things, almost everything. But then, of course, it comes to the practical aspect of things. So how much energy will we use when we recycle a specific metal? The method to do it, will we use a lot of water or will it be somehow harmful in some other way? And what will also be the byproduct? Because we don't talk so much about that, but if we want to recycle, let's say, one specific metal, let's say now we could we have a metal that could be very important for us, there will also be some kind of waste or a byproduct. What are we going to do with that one? Could it contain something that is, for example, dangerous? Or how do we recycle that part? So I think it's very, I think we have to look at the entire system when we are talking about recycling and look how can we use the byproducts, what type of energy do we need for this and how much, and also look at can we combine this in a good way with how we get metals from the mines. Because that would be a very good way. And I know, of course, some people and some companies today are, of course, already doing that, which I think is excellent cases when you can combine the primary and from the mines with the secondary from recycled products.
Mm. And I guess we have one case to listen here, actually. So it's Lynn, who works as a general manager in Boliden Rönnskär. And as I understand, they get, I mean, both scrap and new material from the mine. And out comes copper. I guess two different processes, but still the same product in the end. So I think we have a listen to what she says about this and how it actually works. So I'm curious to understand what happens with my cell phone if I would return it. Hi, Lynn, and welcome to Swedish Innovation Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm fine.
Sounds good. Yeah, so as I mentioned in our intro, you're the general manager at Boliden Rönnskär, but I think very few know about Boliden Rönnskär. Can you give us a brief, like, what do you do at Boliden Rönnskär and what's your role?
Yes, as a general manager, I have the responsibility for the whole site. And what we do here at the Rönnskär smelter, we are a copper smelter that produces copper from primary raw materials, from mines, and from secondary raw materials, like e-scrap, for instance.
Okay. Okay, so you basically are the link between a mine and the end user for copper. Could you say
yes.
It like that?
We are the resource the mine needs to make the metal available at the market. A smelter is needed for you doing that work.
Okay, cool. And regarding today's topic that we will come into a bit more later, circular economy, I'm guessing that you work then with recycling and circular economy, but you also take material directly from the mine then. So you have two flows into your facility.
Yes, we have two flows. And we have, of course, the biggest part is from the mines. About 80% of our raw material come from the mines. And 20% comes from secondary raw material today.
Well, how come you got interested in mining and raw material? And how did you get into this business?
Oh, it started many, many years ago, more than 20 years ago, when I was studying chemistry at the university. And I always was interested in the industry. And we was working a lot with different branches up here in the north, having different kind of school projects. And one of them was connected to the metal industry. And some things in life are a coincidence, but I got an opportunity to do the thesis work for Boliden, and it continued after that, and that's kind of the way it went, and therefore I have been stuck within the industry after that. A lot of challenges, a lot of innovation, a strong focus to improve and be a role model as an industry. And it has a huge impact on where we live. So there has been many different reasons why I have continued to work within the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like, from the outside, it doesn't always look very attractive. But I guess the more you get into it and the more involved you get in the actual problems you're solving, it's actually kind of interesting.
I think that the industry as such is based on kind of old picture that people have of mining and smelting, and we are transforming that picture into a super modern industry today. And I'm glad that COVID is over so that we can bring visitors to sites and so they can see for themselves what modern industry today look like and how it runs. That is important for the metal and mining industry to continue to attract new students and competence into this area, I think.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, Boliden Rönnskär is situated right outside of Skellefteå, is that correct?
Yes, we are located just outside Skellefteå at the harbor. Coastline, mm-hmm. Close to a small town called Skelleftehamn.
That's right. So, and this region, is happening a lot within previously episodes in our podcast. We, for example, talked about Norfolk, where I used to work.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things happening in this region. So I guess that also makes a bit of a difference for you, even though you've been there for a long time.
Absolutely. I think it's very positive that we have more industry up here in the north. I really embrace that. We will have more competence that we need coming into the area, and we can have a sound competition between skilled competence between different sites. So that will contribute to both the universities and to the industries here for attract more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Well, now to the topic of today's episode regarding the trendy circular economy and recycling and so on. So as we said previously, you said 80% comes as new material from the mines and 20% mm-hmm. today is recycled material. Does that mean that the ones where you source materials from the mine see recycling as a threat? Or how does the business work today with recycling within raw materials?
It will not be seen as a threat at all. The mines will be needed for a long, long time. We see the transition in the society today going into more green technologies that will increase the demand for copper quite a lot. And to meet that demand, we need a lot of support from mines coming in with raw materials. The secondary part is something that the society needs also to improve in. How can we recycle materials more efficient and or reuse if that is possible also? And in copper, we in Sweden are quite well doing in terms of how much we recycle. But if we look at the Europe, we have a challenge. We can do a lot more there to collect and make sure that e-waste, for instance, end up so that we can recycle it to new metals that can be put in new products. That's kind of the good things with metal. You can recycle them how many times as possible. They will not get new. They will still have the same properties. They will not be, any properties will not be lost if they are recycled. So. Mm-hmm.
And for me, who's not in the copper business, how is usually copper collected? In what products do you find them, and how is it like ensured that you actually reuse or recycle the copper that is out there?
A lot of copper is used within electronics, so in cars and in all TV, laptops, cell phones, all printed circuit boards contain quite a lot of copper. So printed circuit boards are in a lot of goods out there. So this will be sent to us. We buy that kind of material and then we can melt it down and we can extract the valuable metals out from the printed circuit boards and produce new metals.
Okay, so for example, if you have laptop or other electronics, you as a private person or consumer first need to go and put that laptop into some type of container, and then you need to remove plastic and stuff, and then the actual green little circuit board thing that you see, that one is sent to you.
Exactly. There we are using other parties are you are disassembling the, if we take a computer for instance, are doing the disassembling, I think it's called, to make sure that all material in the goods are recycled. It can be the plastic part or it can be some alumina that goes for recycling, and the printed circuit board is basically what we are getting and buying.
Got it. But it sounds very time consuming and very like you need actual people to do it, very manual work, or how is it? Is this a challenge? You know,
when we get the printed circuit boards, we get them in containers, so we get a lot of it at the same time. So for us, it's sometimes we shred the material to cut it down into smaller pieces, so it is suitable for feeding in our process. And then we have a lot of sampling and assaying to make sure what the content of the raw material is. And then we send it to the feeding point in the smelter. We have the capacity today at our specific plant that is designed for smelting e-scrap to smelt about 2 million cell phones a day. If we translate it to something that people can understand how much it is. So it's a huge amount of e-scrap that we can melt.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot. But how does it translate compared to new material? Because it sounds pretty energy consuming. And I mean, everything should be transported around and collected and finally go to you. What's the actual, is it more sustainable to recycle all these circuit boards compared to when you melt new copper in terms of, I don't know how to measure, CO2?
Yes, it is very sustainable to do it compared to the footprint of the mines. Within Boliden, we have calculated the CO2 footprint from recycled copper compared to the copper that we produce in the Aitik mine. And we actually have the same really good footprint of 1.5 kilo per kilo of copper. And the average benchmark is 4 times higher than that. Okay. So it's a good footprint for both the recycled one and the one that we produce from copper concentrate from the mine. But saying that, there is a specific challenge connected to recycling of e-scrap, and that everybody knows how a printed circuit board looks like, and it is metal kind of stuck on a plastic sheet, and that plastic emits CO2 when we melt it. Mm-hmm. And we are also struggling a lot with reducing the CO2 footprint even more. So here we have a bit of a contradiction between recycling and CO2. If we increase the recycling, we will also increase the CO2 footprint as it looks today. And we are working, of course, a lot with how can we improve technology so that we can continue with this good contributor, I would say, to the circular economy without getting CO2 emissions or increasing them. And I think people are maybe not aware of that there is a problem or a challenge, maybe you should say it like that, in this area.
No, it sounds like this is determined on then how the end product is designed. Or could you use, yes. I mean, could you use other plastic or other materials that wouldn't give the CO2 footprint, do you think?
I think there have been studies to use some kind of wooden base for the circuit board, but it's not something that is out there today. Mm. And there is always a time lag here because the computers and cell phones that we recycle today is basically several years old. So if there will be a new kind of application here for instance, wooden material, then it will take quite some time before that ends up as something that needs to be recycled.
Yeah.
But I think the future will go in that direction. We, in all industries, they're looking for how can we change look into other material with a better footprint, replace problematic one with more sustainable ones.
And if we talk about money and economics, does copper that is recycled, is it more expensive because the process is more complex, or how does it look there?
It's the same. We don't distinguish between, or we don't get any other premium. We have the same product out of the smelter, and that's a copper cathode with a specific quality. So what we can offer is different in CO2 footprint, and that is something that we were first out in the world to do, produce the low carbon copper and recycled copper. And we have launched a new project together with a customer to us, Elkwire, and a cable manufacturer, NKT, to use this low carbon copper in a very big wind farm, Dogger Bank. It's based in the offshore, and the cable to transport electricity from this wind farm into land is then produced with this low carbon copper. And there will be more example of this in the future for sure. If you have a green project, then people want to use more of the ingredients, so to say, in that project with as green profile as possible. So I think it's something that we see in many metals today, not only copper.
So do you see that also, I mean, helping out the recycling business for raw material in general, that we get more and more interested in the footprint of the actual metal and where it comes from and so on, and that the ones using the metals gets more interested in the background or where it comes from?
Yeah, because when we have a chain, customers and upstream or downstream, we are all becoming our scope 3 when we talk CO2 emissions. So people are, of course, looking into their scope 1 and 2, but there is more or less in their own hand to control and to improve. But when it comes to the scope 3, we look both upstreams and downstreams and see how can we push each other to improve there, because then we also get the better total footprint. So there is a lot of things that will develop in this area for sure. And it's a difficulty today, I would say, that there is no standardization around how really to calculate scope 3 or the footprint of, for instance, the CO2 in copper. But we have tried to do it one way, and we are very transparent with how we have used, how we have been thinking with no real allocation and no offset. And we have been very transparent on how we have been thinking and published it. But I hope for the industry, it would be very good if we could come together with a common standard here, so that it's easy to compare also between different metals and different regions or countries or wherever in the world you are. So we are only seeing the beginning of this journey.
Well, a final question then going forward. I mean, looking at the future challenges you have, if you got, you know, 10 billion euros dedicated for this topic, where would you put them? Where do you think we need to invest more and give more time to make it move forward?
Oh, it's a super hard question, but I think I would use some of the money for education, for people to understand that it can be done. If we only look at Europe, we have a quite good understanding, but if we're looking worldwide, there is a huge challenges that we can improve. We would also have to set up new ways of collecting this raw material, so it becomes much easier for the customer to recycle. In Europe and Sweden, we are quite well ahead, but looking worldwide, we can do a lot more. And then I will also use some money for technology development and connected to CO2 emissions to reduce that.
Cool. Yeah, it's a tricky question, but then it sounds like there needs to be things developed on several levels. It's not
absolutely
one solution to a difficult problem.
It's not.
Well, thank you a lot, Lynn, for joining the podcast. It was very interesting to talk to you, and I learned a lot of new things, especially what happens to my computer if I put it into the recycling bin. I haven't even thought about it. So that was great. I hope you enjoyed being on the show.
I enjoyed it a lot, and thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so now we listen to the case with Lynn at Boliden Rönnskär. I guess you, Charlotte, were already aware of this case and that we can recycle copper in Sweden, I guess. So what would you say, just as I asked Lynn, if you were given like 10 billion euros dedicated for this topic, circular economy within mining, what would you do? Where do you think we really need to put more resources and develop going forward?
So I think we have already started with this, particularly in Sweden, which I think is very good. And I see us as one of the countries where we have the possibility to take the lead in this. And this is something I think we will do even more. And of importance connected to this, it's of course also new methods to actually do this. I mean, so technological development could be both in the companies that are doing this, but also for the researchers at universities to find new, more sustainable ways and better, more energy efficient ways to actually do the recycling. But then it's also to design products that could be easily recycled. And then it's all these things we discussed a little bit, but how do we use all the byproducts from, for example, mining? So can we extract things in these byproducts and in all the parts of the value chain when you produce a metal and other things, you often have byproducts containing maybe other metals or other minerals. So to look at this from a system perspective and see how do we use these in the most efficient way. I think that's where I would put the money to if we strive towards a more circular economy.
Yeah, so it sounds like we need to go from, like, I don't know, a linear one type of method or product thinking to more of a circular and system thinking.
Yes. Yeah. And I think some companies are already looking at that, I think. And becoming more and more looking at taking responsibility for their products from the start to the end.
Well, it was great to have you on the podcast, Charlotte. Thank you a lot for your insights. And I will add you also in the episode links if anyone has more questions and want to reach out.
Thank you very much for letting me join this nice talk today.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you like what we're doing, remember to subscribe. And if you really like our podcast, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. Remember, innovation is what makes the impossible possible, and it will all start with you.